This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Kusu Chuang and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. Actually, Noel Lim's not really in the studio. She's a little bit further away. We're testing the use and power of technology today.
She's zoomed away to another room.
She is zoomed away.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Noel. How are you doing all the way?
I'm good.
Chuang, how are you doing this morning?
My nose is blocked. I've got a bit of a headache, and I suspect it's morning sickness, but I can't imagine it will be morning sickness.
You're not sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Noel, how are you doing?
I'm good. No morning sickness, for sure.
How are you feeling? How does this feel transmitting to us remotely like this?
I feel very distant from you.
Aw. We miss you too.
Yeah, so I'm only like, you know, just judging you from your voice, from your voices. Yeah, so I feel a bit distant, but I'm sure we'll get used to this.
Yes, I'm sure we will. This is all part of the new way we work and live. And if this gets tiring, if you get tired of hearing me say that, just let me know over on Twitter or at BFM Radio.
I'm quite tired of listening to you.
Except you, Chuang. I don't really listen to you. All right, but let's talk about the show right now. We're in the 6 a.m. stretch, the lighter side of serious business. And in the next hour, we'll be covering a bit of international, a bit of local. Noel, why don't you tell us what are we looking at on the international scene?
Well, various stories. So one is the U.S. jobless claims. They've risen to 36 million since the start of lockdowns. And obviously, that's a big number. And then also, Iraq has a new prime minister, and he obviously will face a daunting task to stabilize the country.
Yeah, I do not envy that position there. Chuang, you've got the papers all nicely lined up in front of you. Hit us with some headlines.
Well, some basically news on the fact that on the legal front, the stepson of the former prime minister has been discharged. And there's a really good backstory behind it, which I'm not going to tell you until the time is right. Jang, jang, jang.
The perfect tease right there, Chuang.
That's a perfect tease, because this is what I do. I tease. and then there's some news in the share market as well. Interesting numbers there. It's been going gangbusters. So I'll talk about that later as well.
Yeah, speaking of gangbusters, Amazon stock has been doing really well as the rest of the big tech stocks. And we'll be talking about how important Amazon is to you on the back of news that it could become even bigger in the future. That's in about 10 minutes. But right now, is retail therapy good, bad, or complicated? Let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio or drop us a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Kusu Chuang in the studio with me and Noel zooming in from far away. And that was Another Day in Paradise by Phil Collins. And right now we're taking a look at retail therapy. Is it good, bad, or complicated? And before you guys say anything else, you need to answer that question. Chuang, is it good, bad, or complicated?
It's complicated. A bit like a Facebook relationship. I haven't actually bought any weird stuff, but I've been looking at like the markets in a really intense fashion. And it's not just been equity markets. It's been like Bitcoins and Ripple and all that. Don't. It's a long story, lad.
Long story, you know, yeah.
It's a rabbit hole.
Good, bad, or ugly? Or complicated, sorry.
Yeah, I think it's good overall. Yeah, so but because I'm not I didn't really buy anything really, you know. I only bought like personal care products and food items, right, and maybe some shares here and there. But I did have cravings. Huh. And it was really weird. You know, I had cravings, chicken chop, Hainanese chicken chop. I had it like 3 times since, I think, over the span of 4 weeks.
The same cravings that you have after the first trimester or no?
Yeah, I know. It's so strange, right? And then I also had cravings for fruitcake as well as burnt cheesecake.
Burnt cheesecake?
And I'm not sure. Maybe it's that sense that you're isolated, you know, the lack of social contact and so forth. And, you know, it all manifests in cravings.
Yeah, so that's one. On one side, you've got retail therapy. On the other side, you've got comfort food, right?
Food pangs.
Yeah, food pangs, which is something I think a lot of people do. I know I do. 2 weeks ago, I was consuming so much sugar. I was drinking root beer and having ice cream every day. And I knew I had to cut that out.
Because are you pregnant as well, Roshan?
Who knows? I'll find out later. But I'm really not sure. But I think this is something that doesn't just apply to us. I think it applies to everyone, really. Retail therapy is one of those ways that that has permeated the culture in the last decade or so, or even more than that, actually, since the ideation of the American dream. Consumerism is a big part of all of that. And I read this book. Actually, basically, it's a very Pavlovian thing, right? You don't want to reinforce that thing. You don't want to reinforce the behavior that every time you feel upset, you buy something, because every time you do it, you're going to have to up the ante the next time.
That's the American way, lah. I mean, but the thing is, in the last 10 years, as you were saying, e-commerce is a big thing. So MarketWatch ran the story, right, about how this pandemic thing, if you've been locked in for the last, say, 2 months, and then you just go crazy after, like, you know, say midnight, you start buying some crazy stuff. And then you emerge from the lockdown bleary-eyed, and then you've got like 20,000 ringgit in debt, right, from making stupid, bizarre purchases like cat tents or whatever, right? I'm sure there's a lot of people who do this.
Yeah, so apparently there's this quick survey that was done. 35% of Americans say they're making impulse buys to cope with the coronavirus stress. And this is what happens, I think, when you are zooming in on calls with your friends and then you see something interesting in the background and then you ask them what it is, and then next thing you know, you're on Amazon and buying the said item. And, even in Singapore, before their lockdown, their circuit breaker, there was a massive queue at IKEA. Like, you know, people felt like they had to change their furniture or something before they get onto Zoom calls and so that they could look good to their friends and colleagues.
Yeah, actually, there's nothing more disheartening than being on a Zoom call. Then people can see how crappy your house is. So, no, I literally read stuff on that, right? So I watched Jonathan Pye. You know Jonathan Pye?
Yeah,
the satirical political reporter from London. Very, very, very popular YouTuber, and he had a few episodes on his channel about how he had to zoom in for his colleagues, and his house looked really bad and depressing. And look, everybody knew how little money he had, so he had to rectify that situation. Sorry, had to just out him.
So sad. Why are you going to out this fellow? He's actually really quite funny.
He's a good guy. He's really funny, and he's completely opposite to what he is on YouTube in real life. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, retail. Yeah, Noel.
Yeah, something I want to add. What I'm noticing is quite popular, books. Yep. People are now using books as their wallpaper at the back. I mean, not wallpaper, but a real
their
books.
Backdrop, yeah.
As a backdrop. Yeah, and yeah. The Prime Minister does that.
Yeah, so I got a story about a high-flying CEO whose office I once visited, right? It was a double-chamber, double-height ceiling with fake four libraries. It looks like it's like a library, but then you go and see what books they have. They've got, it's actually wallpaper.
There are also fake books, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, so you open
the actual cover,
in IKEA, right? So you can see like real books, but then it's like just a cardboard box, right? Yeah.
Amazing. The things Amazing. That, I mean, that's the meme that's going around now, right? That the area of the Zoom video call that can be seen is spick and span, but the rest of the room is in utter chaos. And Zoom reminds me a lot of technology. And one of the things that's enabled the ability to do things like retail therapy while you're at home in self-quarantine, all of this is, well, is Amazon. It's e-commerce. I mean, in Malaysia, it's probably a Lazada or Shopee. And we're going to be talking about how important something like Amazon is to you in just a little bit. If you've got any thoughts, let us know on Twitter at BFM Radio, or get in touch with us at on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Kusi Chuang in the studio and Noel Lim transmitting over Zoom far, far away. And that was Fool's Errand by The Fleet Foxes. And right now we're taking a look at how important Amazon is to you, or what Amazon represents. It represents e-commerce, the digital age, shopping online. But before this, we were talking about retail therapy and basically one of the things that's allowed it to happen during this time, especially while we're all at home, is e-commerce. Noel, how have you been faring with e-commerce?
During this lockdown or this MCO, I think shipping and postage and all that postal services there has been a backlog. So my cart is my shopping cart has increased, but I've not actually pressed the button to order because I'm not sure when those items would arrive. And when I posted this on Facebook to ask people, when did your items arrive from Amazon? And a lot of people were saying, yeah, there was an extra 1 or 2 week wait during this lockdown.
Yeah. No, I haven't done any shopping actually online. Bizarre as it may sound, but I'm sure a lot of people have, which explains partly why Jeff Bezos is now worth a couple hundred billion dollars, or maybe half that, like, because he had to give half away to Mackenzie, right? The person on whom he cheated.
Yeah, I think
his
first wife.
I think,
yes.
According to the Bloomberg's Billionaire Index, he was worth about 125 billion. Was that in April? But as of May 5th, that's 143 billion dollars. And obviously, he's also been selling his stock. You know, he's been selling his stock to build clocks in mountains and build spaceships to the moon.
Didn't he buy the Washington Post in his personal capacity like 5 years ago?
Yeah.
He did, right?
Yeah, that is his.
That's what Jack Ma did with the South China Morning Post as well, right?
E-commerce players and the news seem to gel.
Intertwine.
Yeah. Oh, they're diversifying the portfolio basis. Maybe. But this one of the other headlines coming out of this is that based on the importance of e-commerce, Bezos could be the first trillionaire the world has ever seen as soon as 2026, all things, just taking everything into consideration, assuming that Amazon continues to go up and all of that jazz. And I guess that also brings up the conversation about the moral hazard of having the idea of having a trillionaire. As it is, we have American politicians who are already talking about the moral hazard of having billionaires. What if you had a trillionaire?
Well, and he's not alone, right? Jeff Bezos, Jack Ma also, maybe by 2030, he might be one too, and he'll be 65 years old. And even Mark Zuckerberg, they estimate by 51 years old, 2035, he could be also a trillionaire.
Yeah, so some weeks ago, Elon Musk made a second appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast,
right? Yeah, he did.
And that was in the wake of him tweeting that he had sold or put on sale all eight of his properties, right? And so Joe Rogan obviously asked him, so why have you done that? It was because he had becoming under increasing flak for being a rich guy at a time when a lot of people were out of jobs and out of money, right? And he was saying that, you know, he was defending the billionaire club in a way, because he was saying that if you create value, if you do stuff better than stuff is done in the past, if you're making jobs and you're making stuff better, then why shouldn't you be accorded status? Because it's capital allocation, right? And I can't fault that, because, I mean, when you look at Jeff Bezos in 1994, he was just this, you know, just another bald...
Have you seen that photo?
Just another ex-merchant banker, bald guy, working in some corner office, and look at what he's built.
All he had here in that photo is immortal, right? You've got Bezos in the corner there with a written sign of Amazon.com above him, and they were just selling books. But obviously, this is not. I don't fault the people who become billionaires. This is policy, right? This is. I mean, there are lots of there's a lot of talk about how Amazon doesn't pay federal taxes in the U.S. There's a lot of talk about how big tech doesn't pay its fair share in taxes, and that's because it's hard to pinpoint exactly where those taxes should be paid and how. But just before we move on here, I actually just did a quick. Quick calculation on the computer here. At $143 billion, it would take Jeff Bezos at a 7% annual increase 29 years to become a billionaire otherwise, instead of the next 6 years if all else remains equal. But yeah. Yes, John.
This is sort of stuff that Roshan would do. But I mean, look, how are you going to spend $140 billion, right? Even Richie Rich couldn't do that in one day. So what can you buy? You know, and how many houses can you live in? How many Ferraris can you drive?
How much caviar can
you eat, you know?
And that's why his ex-wife is giving that money away to charity. I think half of that fortune that she got from the divorce settlement.
Yeah. So if you guys look at the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, which is a dynamic every day, the chart things, right? Out of the 100 billionaires, you can just see how many ex-wives and basically divorcees and surviving spouses there are on that list, right? Nina Huang, you know Nina Huang from Hong Kong? Husband passed away mysteriously like 20 years ago. People suspected that she killed the husband, but be that as it may, she's a billionaire, right? The LVMH fortune, so many, right? So many.
Wow. Okay, thanks for that, John. I've got all the gears working in my head about all the different stories.
Are you giving him some ideas?
So marry rich and then kill your spouse and then you'll be done. Sorted.
This is just a fictional story that Coach Zhang is telling about something he dreamed about. Anyway, that is all pleasant chat, Chuang. But right now we're going into a few messages and then the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. When we come back, we'll be talking about the international headlines. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasan with Noel Lim and Koo Soo Chuang this morning. And that was Do You Realize by The Flaming Lips. And do you realize that we're talking about international headlines right now? Noel Lim, what's popping to you?
I'm looking at the Straits Times in Singapore, the online portals. So some of their top stories, obviously, they will always report on Malaysia. So there is an opinion piece here. Of course, it's a premium piece. Malaysia PM Muhyiddin Yassin is on the firing line over the lack of clarity on his majority in parliament. His already slim grip on power is showing signs of slipping after an MP from his party, Bersatu, appeared to desert him. So this is just a headline here. So if you want to read that, you have to get onto the Straits Times. And there's just a few more stories here. Trump says he doesn't want to talk to Xi right now. Could even cut China ties. So that obviously would not help the market. But we know that Trump is known to make such sensational statements. And in South Korea, they're going to be reopening schools next week, even as cluster linked to clubs are growing. So I suppose South Korea is always quite confident about their healthcare system and knowing that they can cope with any spikes.
What about you, Chuang? What are you paying attention to internationally?
Well, Texas, the biggest state, one of the biggest states in America, has seen a record jump in deaths to 58. And don't forget, they did open up their business 2 weeks ago. So there's something to be read into there. We've also seen how, I think from a couple of days ago, the Federal Reserve started buying up corporate bond ETFs. So in case anyone is wondering what that means, it means that central banks, and the biggest central bank in the world, has basically gone in and past moral hazard and gone into the world of risk. It's a bit like Bank Negara buying bonds in this country, which is unheard of until now. And then it's also the market, which is apparently pricing in the prospect of negative interest rates for America. And in case you wonder what negative interest rates means, it means that instead of paying interest to the bank for borrowing money, the bank pays you interest for borrowing money. That's how topsy-turvy the world is today.
And actually, we'll be covering this in about an hour, actually, at 7:30 a.m. after the news there. We'll be getting into negative rates and what it really means to us. I'm looking internationally. I'm looking at the U.S. jobless claims, right? So every, is it Thursday there, I think? Yes, it is Friday morning here, which means Thursday evening in the States. It comes out every Thursday, and U.S. jobless claims have risen to 36 million since the start of the lockdown. And these are not numbers to mess around with, really. This is much higher than I think the U.S. has ever seen.
Yeah, so but the numbers are slowing, though still very high, and it's obviously it will threaten any hope of a swift economic recovery. But I was also looking at some news reports about 18 million of that number are actually people who are unemployed on temporary layoff. So this suggests that if the economy opens, these people could be rehired back or get back into their old jobs fairly quickly. And so, in that sense, it's good news for the U.S.
Yeah, it's really weird because, in America, right, the whole definition of jobless or employment is really weird because if you are hired for 1 week a month, you are considered employed, okay? So that's how loose the definition is. And then if you are unemployed for more than 4 weeks, you're no longer counted, okay? Which actually means that the 36 million jobless officially could be a lot higher than that. And there were reports from as many as 4 years ago that there could be 50 million Americans who are basically chronically unemployed. That means they haven't had a job for weeks, months, years maybe. And they're in soup kitchens, they're lining up for food. And don't forget, right, the official 36 million unemployed in America over the last, I think, 5 weeks has also seen the NASDAQ rise by 30% in that period. So Main Street is dying, Wall Street is flying. That's how topsy-turvy the world is.
And not just Wall Street, the tech owners are flying.
Tech owners are flying, yes.
Yeah, but that's, I guess that's in a way to be expected, right? Because it's accelerated digital push. At the end of the day, these are companies that have no boundaries, no borders. They operate across the globe, not just in America.
I mean, what is it? Satya Nadella, 2 weeks, he said that two years of
tech adoption in 2 months. But just to point out, with the US jobless data, though, there were some errors reported. It seems that in one report, it was initially, I think the report said 298,000 jobless claims, but the correct number was actually 29,846. There was an additional zero there that completely distorted the data by 10 times, which then goes to show that
the whole American jobs data is distorted. I mean, right? Come on. If you don't have a job for 4 weeks, you're no longer counted. What does that mean? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, the definition is one thing. Accuracy is another thing. This can only just be an estimate. It's the same in Malaysia.
Yeah, so I don't think the US jobs definition is the US only, right? Every country in the world wants to make sure that their economy looks great and their unemployment number looks stellar.
Well, you know that the world is in a bit of a strange place when the other big economy in the world, the other superpower, China. Remember, like at the start of the Wuhan outbreak, and then the Chinese government just changed the definition of what amounts to infected, not infected. They just kept on changing the goalposts every other day. And then people were like wondering, is your number right? Is your number wrong? Is your number bigger? And most likely bigger.
Yeah, these are the numbers that you can
massage.
Massage is one thing, right? It's also like how you end up in accounting standards anyway. It's how you end up with things like cooking the books. Or even I spoke to Jack Kuzi of VFS yesterday on Ring & Sense, and his favorite metric for analyzing any company is revenue, because revenue is very hard to mess with. It's a pure play growth number. Well, it's net profit. You can have all sorts of expenses and stuff in there. But now, then again, all that said, the job situation in the US is nothing to scoff at, and it's something that I think we all need to be paying attention to. Right now, we're going into a few messages, and when we come back, a look at the local papers. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run, and that was Soma by The Strokes. And you're here with me, Roshan Kanesan, Noel Lim, and Koo Soo Chuang. And right now, we're taking a look at the local papers and the portals. And Noel, what do you have there with the Malaysian Reserve?
Yes, so on the front page, targeted tests on migrant workers more viable as businesses restart. So the NGO Tenaga Nita, what they're saying is that businesses and industries should just test foreign workers who have to work in close proximity with each other. And so that's what she's asking them to focus on, because there may be some businesses where, you know, the workers don't work in close proximity. But frankly, I think, you know, I think it's just worth testing everyone, right? And not just foreign workers. There are local workers who also work with, who work in construction sites and so forth. The other story here is by the Malaysian Reserve. The government has been urged to secure food supply chain. So while Malaysia's food supply remains intact with disruptions from the coronavirus, experts are saying that the government should, you know, look at measures to be more self-sufficient. We import a lot of food, and apparently our import bill has gone up, and reliance is like things like milk, fruits and all that. So, but, you know, in terms of rice and all that, we should try to be more self-sufficient. And having said that, maybe this is an opportunity to go local, right? Instead of buying a foreign imported fruits, maybe eat more local fruits. And another story here is TNB will introduce relief packages. Now, in case you're wondering why your electricity bill is quite low, and it's because the meter man has not been able to go to your house to do a meter check. So now people are worried that when come June, they might actually see a spike in their bill. And so I think TNB is coming out to assure people that they're going to look at some relief packages. But here, a final piece here, Malaysian Reserve. Jelebu MP, Datuk Jalaluddin alias, has been appointed chairman of UDA Holdings. So Jalaluddin is an UMNO Supreme Council member and UMNO Jelebu Division Chief. So he has been appointed a plum chairmanship position. And just to also, just to highlight this, he joins a string of politicians who have been recently appointed to various GLCs under the Perikatan Nasional, and that include Prasarana and also, I think, TNB, right?
Hooray, back to the good old days. Fantastic.
Let's, what party, like the
90s, right? 1999, yeah. So very much in the same vein, the stepson of the former Prime Minister, Najib Razak, Riza Aziz, he of Red Granite Productions and therefore of Wolf of Wall Street, which is all about money plundering and graft and doing funny, funny substances on the bosoms of funny, funny people. Well, he's been discharged. He's been discharged under some legal term called discharge not amounting to acquittal. Okay, so basically he walks free. And this, the intrigue goes that this is allowed because he had agreed to give evidence which would result in about $107 million returning to the Malaysian government. But in case that doesn't happen, then the charges are reinstated. The intrigue goes further because apparently this is something which is agreed to by the former Attorney General, Tan Sri Tommy Thomas, who has now come out to say that there was no such thing. He never agreed to such a discharge. And therefore, since this is Malaysia, that storyline is only to be expected. The other thing that is also taking the headlines is the fact that Noraliza and a lawyer named Wong Kar Wo are among opposition MPs tapped to head the Public Accounts Committee. But so the story goes, Wong, who is a former lawyer, has a higher chance because of his legal background. And the third story is the fact that on the Malaysian stock market, the pundits are saying that the confidence is returning because shares traded volume hit 7 billion shares yesterday, and obviously led by the glove stocks. And Roshan, top glove, more than 10 bucks, just in case you're wondering.
Just stop it. It makes me sad enough to just think of how that has rallied. Another headline that's actually on some of the papers, I think it's on the NST front page, is that several states have announced that Friday prayers and congregations will now be allowed under the Conditional Movement Control Order, subject, of course, to SOPs and constraints and all of that. But these states include Perlis, Johor, Perak, Negeri Sembilan, Melaka, and as well as the federal territories, and also includes Sabah and Sarawak, where the Yang di-Pertuan Agong is the head of religion of Islam. So these are things that, I mean, we're seeing some semblance of morning life coming back, regular life coming back.
Morning life for Roshan.
Yes, morning life for me. But we're seeing some semblance of regular life coming back. But I think the DG, Noor Hisham, has said that it's been a difficult few days as we adjust to these new normals and all of that. But it's good. I mean, this is important, right? The most important thing is to keep that curve flat. New clusters are bound to come up in time. This is not something that's going to disappear over time. Even the WHO said this is something that could be a four or five year thing that we deal with. But it's important to just be careful, physically distance, and just maintain that low curve so that the health infrastructure isn't overwhelmed. I think that's the key in all of this.
Well, you know, this thing about how to prevent overwhelming the healthcare system really depends on, you know, whether you allow mass gatherings. So as long as mass gatherings are not allowed and precautions are taken, I guess we are in safe territory. But, you know, I think some recent news here very quickly, I think the malls now are being allowed to open, but you know, on a staggered basis and not more than 30 people in there. But Dr. Jamila Mahmood, who's the special advisor to the Prime Minister, she's calling for some form of lockdown during Hari Raya Aidilfitri to stay safe.
Right. And on that note, we're going into a few messages and then the 7 a.m. news bulletin. And when we come back, we'll be talking economics with Carlos Casanova of COFAS. Particularly, we'll be asking about Malaysia's GDP as well as the flare-up in U.S.-China tensions to the economy. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.